Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're going to continue with Coach Wunstead on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. And Dave, you know, you mentioned that everybody seems to think the Bears need another pass rusher. Isn't that every team in the league? Like, even when you had your greatest defenses, didn't you always want, like, one more pass rusher? Isn't that sort of standard operating procedure in the NFL?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, that's a position where the pass rushers, you just can't get enough of. It's like corners, you know? I mean, everybody says on defense, it's priority is getting the pass rushers and obviously getting those cover corners. You know, they're the term, and you guys have heard me use it, closers, you know? And
right.
to win games, you got to have closers. And how do you close a game? You got the lead, and the other team's got the ball, and they're going to try to score. Well, if you can't put pressure on the passer, there's a good chance that he's going to move the football and they're going to kick field goals or they're going to score touchdowns. So the pass rushers are closers. That's why I think you just can never get enough of the good ones. And that's why they're so scarce. And that's why they're paid the money that they are.
Dave, from a coaching perspective, how surprised were you that Matt Eberflus showed the corner blitz, the nickel blitz, as often as he did against the Bengals? And how much do you think he'll rely upon that to maybe compensate for the lack of a pass rush from that defensive end opposite Montez Sweat?
You know what, David? That's a good question because I was thinking the same thing. There's one thought that, hey, I want to stop these guys, you know, and the old philosophy of – and I remember going back and forth with Jimmy Johnson on this. We would be sitting there watching games, and I'd say, why? I mean, that's crazy that that guy threw the ball there. The head coach got to tell him that they got the game in hand. And he says, oh, you know, that's all on the head coach, Dave. He says, when you hire good offensive coaches, you're hiring them. All they care about and what they're being paid to do is put the ball in the end zone. And on defense, that's my point. When defensive coordinators, when I was a defense coordinator for 15 years, my job was to keep them out of the end zone. And unless the head coach told me, Dave, I want to cover, I don't want to blitz, I was going to do whatever I had to do. Blitz 5, 6, 7, whatever I had to do to keep them out of the end zone. So I think in a situation like that, that was the defensive coordinator of Flus coming out. What do we got to do to stop them? A head coach, if it was the game is for real and everything, now he's got to decide, do we have the game in hand? Do I want to blitz him and take a chance of a big play and man coverage? Yeah, that's for another day. But I think the defensive coordinator in Flus came out. That's one point. The second point that I like to make on this is, do you remember the biggest thing that turned the defense around last year? We were in the bottom 10 in pressures, Bears defense. When Flus took over the defensive play calling, we ended up in the top 10 in pressures and good results. So I think, you know, it's an indication that, sure, we'd like to get pressure with our four, but if we can't, we're kind of picking up where we left off last year.
Dave, I'm curious, when you think about this time of year, obviously the cut down is a week from today. You got to get to 53 men. Do you already have a good idea of what the team will look like? That last preseason game is fairly meaningless. Is there anybody battling for a position, or does it come down to just being healthy?
Well, the one position that I am uncomfortable with right now, and I'm sure that Matt Eberflus is, and I'm sure that Ryan Poles is that offensive line. I really wanted to see Bates play last week, Ryan Bates, and he doesn't play. And we know about the Davis thing. I'm not going to get into that. You know, who's our starting center? Is Davis going to be a guard, or are we going to put Bates in there at guard? Is Jenkins, you know, we got to do what we got to do with Jenkins. I hope he plays 16 weeks, but he hasn't proven that he can do it yet, guys. And so he makes me nervous. Obviously, Braxton Jones is a guy that's getting better, but is he ready to line up and go against Montez Sweat every game, you know, the premier defensive lineman in the league? So there's to me, that's the one position that I think this last game could really help the Bears as far as cleaning it up. And I don't know if that answered your question, Molly, but, you know, I started thinking what positions I'm good everywhere else. The defensive line, I'm good. The secondary, I'm good. We know what we're doing receivers. We know what we're doing at tight ends. Running backs in my mind are set. It's that offensive line right now, and it's because of new guys and because of some injuries and because of still some youth that I don't know. I'm just not feeling it yet. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that's fair. You know? And, Dave, they just activated Kieran Amagaji, who is the third-round pick, who's a left tackle. But we don't know how long that ramp-up will take, whether he'd be able to play right away. I mean, clearly he's on the roster. They drafted him. And I just wonder, does that mean you have to keep an extra offensive lineman? Do you have to look at the numbers game in terms of whether he's ready to go on week one?
Yeah, I don't see how this guy's going to be ready to go on week one. I'd stick him in this game, and I may not take him out of the game. If he's healthy, which obviously he is, I'd stick him in there this week and let him play the entire game. And they'll have a very good – we all will. We'll have a very good – idea as far as where he's at from the an ability, maybe not an ability standpoint, because if he didn't have ability, they wouldn't have drafted him, but just from an experience standpoint, maybe that would be it, you know. But yeah, that's going to be a tough one, because they obviously want to keep the guy. Now, whether anybody else would grab him if he was put on the practice squad, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know anything about him before they drafted him, to be honest with you. I'm sure he's a great kid and he's got some upside. Give Ryan Poles credit. I wish, as I said on your show, I wish Flus would have met him in an alley, not on a country club golf course. That would have made me feel better for him. But, you know, I don't know. I don't have an opinion there. You know, I want to see him play. I'd put him in there and let him go the whole game.
So, Dave, obviously we come out of Saturday understandably excited about the explosiveness, the 45-yard completion to Adunze, what we saw from Caleb Williams on the scramble touchdown, all those things. We hear from Shane Waldron yesterday, and he comes across as very competent and more relaxed and composed than maybe the first couple times we heard from him. But offensively overall, even though you feel very good about the quarterback, it's the most important position. How do you think the Bears feel about their running game? Because I still believe that at the end of the day, as they say, when the Bears game plan for the Tennessee Titans, the priority one offensively will be establishing the run so your rookie quarterback has more options and can neutralize a defensive front in whatever way they can by establishing the ground game. And I wonder how you feel about what's ahead for the Bears running game.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to be critical. Hey, throw the ball to score points. But you got to be able to run that ball to close games out, guys. You run the ball to win. You know, I've made the analogy on these shows, on your guys' show, that I was around when Brett Favre was a rookie, and I know what Mike Holmgren did, and I was around when Tom Brady was a rookie. You know, both those instances, it was heavy run at New England with Brady and play action, okay, and some screens. On the other side, Green Bay at the time with Favre was run, and it was screen kings of the world. And Mike Holmgren made the point, the reason I'm throwing tight end screens and fullback screens and wide receiver screens and running back screens, Dave, he said, we were talking in the offseason. He said, I always looked at those for Brent as running plays. And I knew that it was a high percentage play. And if we made 4 yards, that's as good as we might do running the ball, and we could keep the chains moving. So my point is, what the Bears are doing, yeah, we're throwing the ball down the field. We're going to have to score points. I get all that, Bear fans. So don't, you know, but in the same time, when this thing, we start playing for real, lining up and hitting somebody in the mouth and knocking them off the ball, that is going to have to happen. You know, in some form or fashion, we're going to have to move the chains. And I gave you two situations of what other guys have done. You know, I don't know. Is Caleb that much better than these guys? Are we that much more advanced? Are we that much more bold? I don't know where the fine line is. But when this thing starts for real and we get up some of these teams, we're going to have to help Caleb out a little bit more, I think, with the play calling.
Dave, we had an argument earlier discussion about Velus Jones and his role on this team. If he is just a kick returner, is that too much of a specialist, or is that enough if he's got speed to be a member of the team? He's not a punt returner. He's a kick returner. They don't believe he's a wide receiver. They moved him to running back. I don't know if he's a running back. What is your take on Velus Jones with the Bears?
Everything that he's doing at the running back position, our man Scott could do. I believe that. I think they're showcasing him, trying to get him as many looks as possible, trying to get somebody interested in him out there, and they trade him. That's my opinion.
You don't like the idea of him being a hybrid running back wide receiver? You think
I don't. I would go with one of these other guys. I mean, running back, come on. You're going to have Swift. You're going to have Herbert, who's had a very good preseason. And Roschon Johnson's going to be your guy that ponds it up in there. Swift can catch. You put Swift doing that, some of that stuff that Velus is doing, or put Scott in there. I'd give it to a Dunze. Let him run the reverse. I saw him do it this week. I don't know. I think I just don't see the value. That's just my opinion.
We heard from Jim Miller yesterday, Dave, talk about the mental toughness he has observed from Caleb Williams and talk about how that separated him from maybe some of the predecessors at the position in Chicago, because being the Bears quarterback in Chicago, as you know, requires a thicker skin, a tougher resolve maybe, a personality trait that maybe not everyone has had. What do you think about Caleb Williams' mental toughness that has impressed you, and how important is that in a place like Chicago because of, let's face it, Jim Miller was right. A lot of guys who have come through here didn't have it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to say to this point. Now, we haven't played a real game yet, so we got to be careful. You know, I think all those guys that Jim would be referencing, and we all are, I'm on the same page. I think that they felt pretty good and pretty confident at this point. Right before the lights come on for real, but I think the big advantage of Caleb has, guys, you know, I remember a couple first round picks, you know, I mean, Curtis Enos, Rashawn Salaam, I mean, these guys all held out. These guys had nothing until they showed up a week before the first opener. Okay, and I bring this up because Caleb, as a rookie at the quarterback position, they were talking to him about a playbook back in March. Once Ryan Poles came out and said, "You're our guy," I remember how excited I was hearing Caleb's interviews. You know, this was a month before the draft, saying, "Boy, this guy knows that we're going to take him. This guy is excited to be in Chicago. I love everything that he's saying." So even though I don't know what the rules are now, if there are any rules, when he can start talking, I promise you, Caleb Williams was into that playbook, and they were his conversations. I mean, he had a jump on this thing, and he did it with a lot of enthusiasm. So I think he is way ahead of the curve as far as his knowledge and what's expected at the quarterback position. I think that was a big advantage for him, the way he went about it.
So you look at where they're at. We've pretty much seen the preseason. Everything with Caleb Williams, there has been no kind of difficulty. There's been no obstruction at this point. Obviously, that's coming, Dave. Everybody has to face adversity in the National Football League. Every quarterback faces it on a weekly basis. Is this is this almost going too well? Are you scared at all by the fact that this is so much positivity? It can only go one other way.
I'll say one word: pressure, pressure, pressure. And I'll give you, I remember when Buddy Ryan, before he was down there, I was coaching at the University of Miami, and Buddy came down to work. He was the head coach of the Eagles. He just left the Bears. And I was the assistant at defensive coordinator of the Hurricanes then. And he was interested in drafting Jerome Brown, our starting defensive tackle, who he did take, by the way, I think sixth or ninth or whatever he drafted him in the first round. And Buddy came down to Miami, and we were talking, and we were talking about the Bear defense, and then we got into just philosophy. And he said, "Dave, let me tell you something. If that quarterback doesn't have a fear every snap, that if he goes back to pass, that he is going to get hit in the mouth, you got no chance on defense." And so my point is, what's going to happen with Caleb? And what's the big next step is when we start playing for real and the pressure comes. When the pressure comes on him and he's got to make those same decisions that he's made fantastically, he's got to make the same throws, the same plays, that will be the determining factor, Mully, that we'll be able to say, boy, you know what, this kid is way ahead of the curve, and he's, which is the way I feel right now, and I'm saying it, he's ahead of the curve. But that will be the factor. And I just throw the Buddy Ryan thing out to kind of give you guys an analogy of how I always thought about it. And I think most defensive coaches in the NFL believe that. They truly do. So, you know, yeah, up until the next regular season game, I would just tell the listeners, the fans, I know this is like watching paint dry. Boy, this was the longest time of the NFL season for me. When we got done and we had the last preseason into the opener, it was a long period of time because everybody, coaches, players, fans, you know, all of us in the media, we're all so fired up for that opening kickoff. And how fast can it get here? It never gets there fast enough.
That's great stuff, Dave. We also have Hard Knocks to kind of tide us over a little bit. Episode 3 tonight. I want to ask you this question kind of off the wall related to that. You coach for the Bears. You coach a lot of other places. Much has been made about Hard Knocks lacking profanity, because from the top down, George McCaskey has requested that his players watch their mouths and has made it an edict to HBO to not include that as part of the episodes, part of the series. In your experience coaching the Bears, was there any like overt edict from above? Hey, you want to watch your mouth here. Was it much different here than other places? It is a football locker room. It is a football field. People swear. I wondered if it was much different here in your experiences than other places.
Than Dallas? No, I'm kidding. absolutely not. And trust me on this. I love that. I didn't realize George had said that. But you know what? Hats off to you, George, because my grandsons that are 10 years old enjoy watching that. Okay? So I appreciate, I truly do, I appreciate the way that Matt Eberflus and Ryan Poles and George McCaskey and these players are handling this. I think if you're getting the inside of what goes on, but you're getting it in a manner that's good for the sport.
Yeah, David wanted to know if you ever swore, and I told him that you were a daily communicant. You were going to mass for some reason.
I was.
Confession's good for the soul, Dave.
I was like, I'll tell you how I was. No, I won't say this, but when I was coaching with Coach Shula, okay, a quick story. When I was coaching for Coach Shula, and most people don't even realize that he hired me from the University of Miami because I was only with him for 7 weeks. I don't even know if I got a paycheck. But and we were practicing at St. Thomas University in Miami. They, right across where our meeting room was, the staff room, there was a chapel. And Coach Shula would go to mass every morning. And keep in mind, he never really got cleaned up, shaved, and all that stuff until after he worked out at noon. So the staff meeting would start when he came out of chapel. So we would always have somebody, one of the young coaches, with a sign to, like, sit there and look out the window. And the minute that he came out of the chapel, he would yell around the building, you know, the boss is coming, the boss is coming. And we'd grab our notepads, and we'd all run into the office. Well, it was about a 45-second walk, and he would walk in, and he would sit down. And as an example, he was, say he was mad at me for something. He would say, Wanstead, what the uppity, uppity, blankety, blankety, blank are you doing? You do that one more blanket. And we would all be looking at each other and saying, 45 seconds from mass to the meeting room. How can that happen that fast? Well, trust me, guys. I've lived it, okay, Molly? So when I came out of St. Mary's up there, yeah. I can appreciate that.
Great stuff, Dave.
We would laugh, and he would have that beard on, and he would be, you know, tough as nails, Coach Shula was, as we know, and that jaw, and he'd be cussing us, and it was a classic. Yeah, damn, there every morning. It was beautiful.
That's great, Dave. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
great
Dave.
Stuff. That's so much fun.
Take care.
Okay, guys.
All right, see you later.
It is professional football.
It is professional football.
But it is nice that it's clean. The family can enjoy it.
Well, I think it's interesting to hear Dave express it that way.
Yeah.
He appreciates it because
sure.
His 10-year-old grandson's
That's
watching.
Good stuff. 312-644-6767. It's Molly and Haw on the Score.
I'm watching the preseason this year. I'm like, yo, this dude is special, right? And I don't really care too much for preseason, but when I do watch him, it reminds me, lets me know, like, yo, I was right. He's as good as I thought, and probably even better.
Yeah.
And just imagine when he gets to more comfortable with the offense, right? Because there's a couple times where I see he wanted to throw the ball, but he wasn't really sure. He held it a little longer than he wanted to. So imagine when he is sure, and he is super confident, right? He knows the offense. He knows where guys should be at and where they shouldn't be at. All these type of things. He's going to be even better. I ain't going to lie, man. Watching Caleb Williams. Dave, let me Hall of Fame. He gonna be in that class. Look, I mean, he got a long way to go.
Whoa.
But listen, I ain't gonna lie, man. I met his pops. I met his mom. I really want to tell him, yo, get his measurements.
No.
Because he gonna get that jacket.
Oh, wow. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Shady McCoy talking on the FS1 show, Speak. Hall of Fame.
It's big praise, high expectations, kind of on brand, though, with the way this preseason has gone. On Saturday, Caleb Williams was asked post-game about Tyreek Hill, comparing him to Patrick Mahomes, handled that question like a pro, like a seasoned veteran, and then we get the aftermath, whether it's Shady McCoy or Dan Orlovsky talking about him being the best quarterback ever. Months after Dan Orlovsky said the Bears should take Jaden Daniels ahead of Caleb Williams, but that's ancient history. The point being that we're all going to have to, maybe before the season, maybe in as Dave Wanstead alluded to, the lull between the last preseason game and the first regular season game, maybe that'll give us some time to maybe temper the enthusiasm, recalibrate the expectations, maybe more realistic, but I think it's hard to do that when you see what we saw on Saturday and when you hear what we're hearing around the league from people who have played the sport. This kid is special, and the Bears are the beneficiaries of his presence here, and let's hope it is for a very long time.
Interesting to hear Coach Wanstead talk about talking with Mike Holmgren about what they were doing with Aaron Rodgers when he first came to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers was not drafted by
Favre.
Brett Favre.
Yeah, Favre.
Brett Favre was not drafted.
Falcons.
He was a Falcons
second
player,
rounder.
And they traded for him. And then when they brought him in, they were running different types of screens and different. And that's the West Coast offense where your short passing game is your run game. So it's very interesting, but this is a totally different deal because this is not a guy that's been in the league and waited. This is a guy that is drafted number one and immediately playing.
And you really don't have at least that we've seen. I mean, I don't really look at the Bears being the team that uses the long handoff of the swing pass to the running back.
Right.
I don't look at them using a lot of training wheels on Caleb Williams, so to speak. I look at them being up and running from day one, from week one. Now, the coaching part of it will come in reminding him every snap, you know, before every pass play that's called, you don't have to hit big here. You don't have to think big here. You need to think about moving the chains, not necessarily, you know, going downfield. That's going to be a difficult instinct to suppress, I think, for Caleb Williams. That's going to require some coaching, some real reinforcement on a series-to-series basis. But I don't know you want to coach it out of him. There's got to be this happy medium between, as we were talking yesterday, knowing when to take your shots down the field. We saw it on Saturday. And knowing when to take the gimmies that are going to be there in this offense.
It'll be really interesting if it is indeed going to be a run-based offense. And by that, I just mean if they're going to try to establish the run to set up the passing game, which is how many teams do it. And if they're not running the long handoff, as you call it. Because I think that that there will be plenty of chances to kind of move the chains as opposed to take the long ball, take the home run ball. And, you know, the one thing that Waldron said yesterday I thought was interesting, when he was complimenting how they played in the game, he said that every possession ended in a kick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want.
That's what you want.
A field goal, an extra point, a punt. And those are all good things because it means there's no turnovers.
Well, the punt can be a very effective play, especially when you have a punter like Torrey Taylor. His point was just that.
Yeah.
They protected the football.
That's the
And way. When Caleb Williams came in, it sounds like he's still coming into the league. He hasn't taken a snap in a regular season yet. But the concern coming out of college, I should say, is ball security because of how many fumbles he committed when he was – at USC his last season there, and you don't want that to be a chronic problem in the NFL. I think you see some good signs about his awareness, his hyper awareness of ball protection, even to the point where when he was being chased and he extended the football so he didn't get stripped.
Yeah.
That might have been against the Bills. So he has these instincts that are being coached well, and it's a point of emphasis clearly that ball security is important. And then the interceptions to avoid, that's just got to be something that comes from him and the ability to process things quickly and not get rattled to the point where you're rushing your throws.
And I thought it was really interesting after Justin Fields' first preseason game with Pittsburgh, what you heard from Mike Tomlin immediately was, you know, we cannot turn the ball over. Like, he didn't. There were a couple of mishandles of the football, and that's the coaching point he took away from the game. It wasn't, oh, he can do this, he can do that. It's, you can't give up the ball, period, end of story.
Huge point of emphasis by every head coach. I think that's also, you don't want to jinx it, but we may not see Caleb Williams take another snap until the regular season week one. They have not struggled with the center quarterback exchange. That's not been something that I can remember being, was it?
You just jinxed it.
Well, I did? Okay.
That's the Malecki.
But if he doesn't take a snap on Thursday night, I didn't jinx anything. So
opening day, if there's a bad snap, I'm coming for you.
There only could be a bad snap now. And this is why I think, you know, when we look at the offensive line configuration and, you know, the debates and Coleman Shelton and these kind of conversations.
Yes.
If Caleb Williams doesn't take a snap Thursday night, I think Coleman Shelton is your week one starter at center.
It looks that way.
Because you don't want to mess with something that has worked.
The other thing is he's a center.
Yeah. He's a true, more natural position.
Yeah.
And you want to get off on the right foot in terms of communication, identification of fronts, and also just the quarterback-center exchange. Mm-hmm. That security, that ball security means something. And if the Bears can be, they don't have to, you always want to be explosive. You always want to, obviously, go down the field and hit all your open receivers, but you have to protect the football first and foremost. That is priority one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a very important coaching point to remember for everybody at every level of the game, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, that is what we saw from the Bears as they've managed their way through this preseason is that they're taking the ball away and they're not giving the ball away.
Well,
if you can do that, that's a successful NFL season.
The Lovie Smith era was defined by the Bears' ability to take the ball away at a high rate and protect it when they were good.
Right.
When the Bears were good, they were protecting the football in a way that, how did they do it? Well, they had a strong running game. They had an offensive line they trusted, and they had a passing game that was sporadic but effective enough on occasion.
And this will be a totally different animal by all accounts and by everything we've seen. Nonetheless, you cannot give the ball away. And I think that's just an important reminder that Shane Waldron got to yesterday. Just a good coaching point, always keep in mind. And I think we're pleased with how that has gone. I believe it was the Cincinnati practice when they practiced against them. The first pass he threw was an interception. It's practice. It's practice. But he throws an interception and then immediately rebounds from that and has a pretty good practice for the entirety of it. But you want to avoid that first part of it if you're in an actual NFL game.
No doubt about it. All related to this idea of taking the shots down the field with a higher risk, with a higher reward, and also understanding that you don't always have to take those shots. We keep, you know, because keeping the chains moving is important. And also, there's never, the punt doesn't have to be a bad play. It's much better than a turnover.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Just an important thing to remember. And I think so far it's not a concern. And there is no, you know, I'm not trying to bring it up as a concern. I'm just saying that that's one of the things that the coach mentioned yesterday.
You have to address concerns.
Yes.
You have to anticipate them. The next big, the next big picture concern, a point of discussion, conversation will be after week one, maybe week two, is that who's not getting the ball enough?
Yeah, that'll hunt.
Who's not getting the ball enough?
They got too many weapons.
The Bears will be scoring points. They'll be averaging what they need to average offensively. They'll be clicking, and then it will be, why doesn't Keenan Allen have more touches? Or what happened to DeAndre Swift? Or what about Cole Kmet? Remember
Kmet
him?
Might be the guy.
Remember him?
Might be the forgotten player.
Maybe. Who knows?
Could be. If you're so busy not
somebody
coaching,
will be
not coaching the aggressiveness out of the guy. Forget to tell him to throw that pass over there. All right. It's good fun. 312-644-6767. We got Mike Florio next. Get a chance to talk to Mike. Mully and Haw on the score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day.
Day by day.
We get better and better.
We get better and better.
Till we can't beat.
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you?
We're getting fired up, getting ready for what's going to be a glorious season for the Chicago Bears. I don't know if you've seen, but apparently Caleb Williams heading to the Hall of Fame.
No.
I don't know if he's going to visit. He already went there. But
Here's my Caleb Williams take. We said this yesterday on our show. When Patrick Mahomes hit the NFL in 2018, and there was a Michael Jordan quality to the way that he showed everyone how the human body can be contorted in ways we hadn't seen before. And that presumably influenced a lot of young players as to how the quarterback position could be played. Caleb Williams was 16 at the time. Mahomes was starting out doing the things we've grown accustomed to over the past six seasons. When you watch Caleb Williams, I think he's the first guy of this generation of young guys who saw what Mahomes was doing and decided to emulate it, because there's so much of the way Williams moves and the things he does, the way he throws the ball. Now, you have to have the physical ability to do it, but I think that we're going to see more guys like this, and I think Williams is the first one that we can look to and say, that's the closest thing to Mahomes that we've seen since Mahomes showed up.
I think he could make the behind-the-back pass. I definitely think he's capable. Mike, though, objectively speaking, as much as we're excited and I think is justified, what could get in the way? What do the Bears need to avoid? What cautionary words of wisdom would you offer if you're worried about this kind of getting – everything's going well now, but what could happen to make that change?
Playing the Packers twice, the Lions twice, and the Vikings twice. I mean, that's the big difference between the Bears and the Texans from a year ago. Nobody expected anything out of the Texans. C.J. Stroud ended up being the guy. The Texans playing every game except week 18 at 1 o'clock Eastern, 12 Central, went unnoticed as they were gradually putting together a special season. And lo and behold, they made it to the playoffs. They blew out the Browns, and they gave the Ravens everything they could handle in the divisional round. I think the Bears will have a harder go of that because of the division they're in. I think they are going to have their hands full every time they play one of those division rivals. Now, beyond the division, the conference isn't necessarily murderer's row. You got the 49ers, you got the Eagles, and who knows what the Bucs are going to be. I think they're woefully underrated in a lot of circles. But I think if the Bears can really goose that offense, and it looks like they can, I mean, between DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert, and you bring in Caleb Williams, and you have Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore, and Rome Odunze, it's hard for the brain to process the possibility the Bears might have a top 10, maybe even top 5 offense this year. A lot of it comes down to what Caleb Williams does. And yeah, he hasn't played in a regular season game yet. And yeah, it took a while for him to get going on Saturday. But man, some of the things he does, the way he buys time with a pump fake, avoids contact, there's so many great things about his game. And he can throw it. That rolling to the left and being able to throw the ball, the deep throw to Odunze, where he's rolling left and he's able to still control and loft the ball and have it drop right in, that's a thing of beauty. And once you see that a guy can do that, Bill Walsh always said, if you show me something a guy can do once, I can coach him to do it all the time. I mean, when you can do that kind of stuff, you've got a special skill set. So I think the Bears could make the playoffs this year. The problem is there's 15 other teams in the NFC that aren't going to concede a damn thing to anyone.
Yeah, I think the problem also, as you mentioned, is the division. You know, the Lions look like a pretty good team. The Packers, both those teams made the playoffs and won. And I know J.J. McCarthy is out, but they're not going to lay down in Minnesota. At least that's what they're saying. Even if Brian Flores is under fire from Tua Tagliavola.
Yeah, look, the Vikings are a team that I think most people are going to expect to finish fourth, and maybe they will. But the Vikings enter the season, I think, with the perfect lack of expectation. When you naturally and organically have no expectations, that helps a coach so much because, number one, the players don't get big heads, and number two, they got a chip on their shoulder because the Vikings can be good enough. Most teams in the NFL, if it all lines up for them and they stay healthy, and of course the Vikings have already been bitten by the injury bug, but if you can stay healthy, you can be competitive. And we see it every year. We spend months talking about what the next season is going to be. And then they start playing games, and the games come quickly, and you've got a few days before the next week starts, and then they all come, and you reassess, and before you know it, you realize we were wrong in what we thought. You know, we're going to be wrong about everything except the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl again and winning a third straight. Everything about this season is completely and totally unwritten except the final chapter, the Chiefs win their third straight Super Bowl.
So, Mike, I like to talk about the rookie quarterbacks. You look at Bo Nix making a run in Denver, likely to be the starter. Jaden Daniels named the starter in Washington. What took so long? Drake May making a run in New England. But I don't understand. Help us figure this out. Why did Michael Penix not play in preseason game number 2 if his role primarily this season will be as a backup?
Well, it's always difficult to accurately predict the thought processes of the irrational. And the Falcons have already been irrational in making Penix the 8th overall pick after they gave $100 million fully guaranteed as a practical matter to Kirk Cousins. But when he doesn't play in the second preseason game and won't play in the third preseason game, that tells me either that they got freaked out by the J.J. McCarthy injury and they're being overly cautious. That's one possible explanation. Another is they're not entirely sure Kirk Cousins is going to be ready to go week 1, so they want to keep Penix healthy in the event Cousins isn't ready to go. Maybe they don't want to build more of a groundswell among media, fans, teammates, owner, because I think the owner is a big proponent of playing Michael Penix. So let's just keep this guy under wraps for this preseason beyond that first game. And then finally, maybe they've already decided to go with Penix. And it dawned on me today, you know, usually with a rookie quarterback, once you put him out there, you can't really take him back. You can't bench him. It messes with his development. You got to be all in and you got to let it run its course before you take the guy out. But what they could do, they could say Kirk Cousins isn't truly fully ready. We don't want him to re-injure the Achilles. He's 36, et cetera. So we're going to give Penix just a couple of games while Kirk gets all the way to 100%. And then if Penix doesn't play well, all I have to say is Cousins is ready. We're not benching him. Cousins is ready. If he does play well, Cousins may never be ready. So again, it's hard to predict because they've done some nutty stuff, but it's weird. There's got to be a reason. And the reason can't be we've seen enough. No, he's not going to play except in the preseason based upon what you've been telling us. So I think we're going to see him on the field sooner than later. That's my gut.
Wow. Great stuff, Mike. Thank you as always.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. That's really interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is, because you didn't expect him to be a rookie quarterback to join the others. There could be as many as four starters by the first month of the season. He would be number five.
Wow. All right, we've got Stacey Dales going to join us next. We'll get a chance to talk to Stacey. She's been up there watching everything, and I really enjoyed some of her conversation.
She was at the game on Saturday.
Yes.
Saw her there.
Saw her talking to Roma Dunze while the rain was spattering down, and he had an umbrella for Stacy's left getting soaked. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. 67 is Mully and Haw on the score.
I watched him in the preseason this year. I'm like, yo, this dude is special, right? And I don't really care too much for preseason, but when I do watch him, it reminds me, lets me know, like, yo, I was right. He's as good as I thought, and probably even better.
Yeah.
And just imagine when he gets to more comfortable with the offense, right? Because there's a couple times where I see he was trying to, he wanted to throw the ball, but he wasn't really sure. He held it a little longer than he wanted to. So imagine when he is sure, and he is super confident, right? He knows the offense. He knows where guys should be at and where they shouldn't be at. All these type of things. He's going to be even better. I ain't going to lie, man. Watching Caleb Williams.
Yeah. Gonna be
Dave,
good.
Let me. Hall of Fame. He gonna be in that class. I mean, he got a long way to go.
Whoa.
But listen, I ain't gonna lie, man. I met his pops. I met his mom. I really want to tell him, yo, get his measurements.
No.
Because he gonna get that jacket.
Oh, wow. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Shady McCoy talking on the FS1 show, Speak Hall of Fame.
It's big. Praise, high expectations, kind of on brand, though, with the way this preseason has gone. On Saturday, Caleb Williams was asked post-game about Tyreek Hill, comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. Handled that question like a pro, like a seasoned veteran. Mm-hmm. And then we get the aftermath, whether it's Shady McCoy or Dan Orlovsky talking about him being the best quarterback ever. Months after Dan Orlovsky said the Bears should take Jaden Daniels ahead of Caleb Williams, but that's ancient history. The point being that we're all going to have to, maybe before the season, maybe in as Dave Wansett alluded to, the lull between the last preseason game and the first regular season game, maybe that'll give us some time to maybe temper the enthusiasm, recalibrate the expectations, maybe more realistic, but I think it's hard to do that when you see what we saw on Saturday and when you hear what we're hearing around the league from people who have played the sport. This kid is special, and the Bears are the beneficiaries of his presence here, and let's hope it is for a very long time.
Interesting to hear Coach Wonstadt talk about talking with Mike Holmgren about what they were doing with Aaron Rodgers when he first came to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers was not drafted by Green – not Aaron Rodgers.
Favre.
Brett Favre.
Yeah, Favre.
Brett Favre was not drafted.
Falcons.
He was a Falcons
second
player,
rounder.
And they traded for him. And then when they brought him in, they were running different types of screens. And that's the West Coast offense where your short passing game is your run game. So it's very interesting, but this is a totally different deal because this is not a guy that's been in the league and waited. This is a guy that is drafted number one and immediately playing.
And you really don't have, at least that we've seen. I mean, I don't really look at the Bears being the team that uses the long handoff of the swing right. pass to the running back.
Right.
I don't look at them using a lot of training wheels on Caleb Williams, so to speak. I look at them being up and running from day one, from week one. Now, the coaching part of it will come in reminding him every snap, you know, before every pass play that's called, you don't have to hit big here. You don't have to think big here. You need to think about moving the chains, not necessarily, you know, going downfield. That's going to be a difficult instinct to suppress, I think, for Caleb Williams. That's going to require some coaching, some real reinforcement on a series-to-series basis. But I don't know you want to coach it out of him. There's got to be this happy medium between, as we were talking yesterday, knowing when to take your shots down the field. We saw it on Saturday. And knowing when to take the gimmies that are going to be there in this offense.
It'll be really interesting if it is indeed going to be a run-based offense. And by that, I just mean if they're going to try to establish the run to set up the passing game, which is how many teams do it. And if they're not running the long handoff, as you call it. Because I think that that there will be plenty of chances to kind of move the chains as opposed to take the long ball, take the home run ball. And, you know, the one thing that Waldron said yesterday I thought was interesting, when he was complimenting how they played in the game, he said that every possession ended in a kick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want.
That's what you want.
A field goal, an extra point, a punt. And those are all good things because it means there's no turnovers.
Well, the punt can be a very effective play, especially when you have a punter like Torrey Taylor. His point was just that.
Yeah.
They protected the football.
That's the
And
one.
When Caleb Williams came in, it sounds like he's still coming into the league. He hasn't taken a snap in a regular season yet. But the concern coming out of college, I should say, is ball security because of how many fumbles he committed when he was – at USC his last season there, and you don't want that to be a chronic problem in the NFL. I think you see some good signs about his awareness, his hyper-awareness of ball protection, even to the point where when he was being chased and he extended the football so he didn't get stripped.
Yeah.
That might have been against the Bills. So he has these instincts that are being coached well, and it's a point of emphasis clearly that ball security is important. And then the interceptions to avoid, that's just got to be something that comes from him and the ability to process things quickly and not get rattled to the point where you're rushing your throws.
And I thought it was really interesting after Justin Fields' first preseason game with Pittsburgh, what you heard from Mike Tomlin immediately was, you know, we cannot turn the ball over. Like, he didn't. There were a couple of mishandles of the football, and that's the coaching point he took away from the game. It wasn't, oh, he can do this, he can do that. It's, you can't give up the ball, period, end of story.
Huge point of emphasis by every head coach. I think that's also, you don't want to jinx it, but we may not see Caleb Williams take another snap until the regular season week one. They have not struggled with the center quarterback exchange. That's not been something that I can remember being, was it?
You just jinxed it.
Well, I did? Okay.
That's the Malecki.
But if he doesn't take a snap on Thursday night, I didn't jinx anything. So
opening day, if there's a bad snap, I'm coming for you.
There only could be a bad snap now. And this is why I think, you know, when we look at the offensive line configuration and, you know, the debates and Coleman Shelton and these kind of conversations.
Yes.
If Caleb Williams doesn't take a snap Thursday night, I think Coleman Shelton is your week one starter at center.
It looks that way.
Because you don't want to mess with something that has worked.
The other thing is he's a center.
Yeah. He's a true, more natural position.
Yeah.
And you want to get off on the right foot in terms of communication, identification of fronts, and also just the quarterback-center exchange. Mm-hmm. That security, that ball security means something. And if the Bears can be, they don't have to, you always want to be explosive. You always want to, obviously, go down the field and hit all your open receivers, but you have to protect the football first and foremost. That is priority one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a very important coaching point to remember for everybody at every level of the game, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, that is what we saw from the Bears as they've managed their way through this preseason is that they're taking the ball away and they're not giving the ball away. Well, if you can do that, that's a successful NFL season.
The Lovie Smith era was defined by the Bears' ability to take the ball away at a high rate and protect it when they were good.
Right.
When the Bears were good, they were protecting the football in a way that, how did they do it? Well, they had a strong running game. They had an offensive line they trusted, and they had a passing game that was sporadic but effective enough on occasion.
And this will be a totally different animal by all accounts and by everything we've seen. Nonetheless, you cannot give the ball away. And I think that's just an important reminder that Shane Waldron got to yesterday. Just a good coaching point, always keep in mind. And I think we're pleased with how that has gone. I believe it was the Cincinnati practice when they practiced against them. The first pass he threw was an interception. It's practice. But he throws an interception and then immediately rebounds from that and has a pretty good practice for the entirety of it. But you want to avoid that first part of it if you're in an actual NFL game.
No doubt about it. All related to this idea of taking the shots down the field with a higher risk but a higher reward. And also understanding that you don't always have to take those shots. Because keeping the chains moving is important. And also, the punt doesn't have to be a bad play. It's much better than a turnover.
Yeah, it's good. It's an important thing to remember. And I think so far it's not a concern. And there is no, I'm not trying to bring it up as a concern. I'm just saying that that's one of the things that the coach mentioned yesterday.
You have to address concerns. You have to anticipate them. The next big picture concern, a point of discussion, conversation, will be after week one, maybe week two, is that who's not getting the ball enough?
Yeah, that'll help.
Who's not getting the ball enough?
They got too many weapons.
The Bears will be scoring points. They'll be averaging what they need to average offensively. They'll be clicking, and then it will be, why doesn't Keenan Allen have more touches? Or what happened to DeAndre Swift? Or what about Cole Kmet?
Remember Cole Kmet might be the guy.
Remember him?
Might be the forgotten player.
Maybe. Who knows?
Could be. If you're so busy, not coaching the aggressiveness out of the guy. Forget to tell him to throw that pass over there. All right. It's good fun. 312-644-6767. We got Mike Florio next. Get a chance to talk to Mike, Mully, and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day.
Day by day.
We get better and better.
We get better and better.
We can't beat, beat.
We can't beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
What time is this? Game time. What time is this? Game time.
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you?
We're getting fired up, getting ready for what's going to be a glorious season for the Chicago Bears. I don't know if you've seen, but apparently Caleb Williams heading to the Hall of Fame.
No.
I don't know if he's going to visit. He already went there. But
Here's my Caleb Williams take. We said this yesterday on our show. When Patrick Mahomes hit the NFL in 2018, and there was a Michael Jordan quality to the way that he showed everyone how the human body can be contorted in ways we hadn't seen before. And that presumably influenced a lot of young players as to how the quarterback position could be played. Caleb Williams was 16 at the time. Mahomes was starting out doing the things we've grown accustomed to over the past six seasons. When you watch Caleb Williams, I think he's the first guy of this generation of young guys who saw what Mahomes was doing and decided to emulate it, because there's so much of the way Williams moves and the things he does – the way he throws the ball. Now, you have to have the physical ability to do it, but I think that we're going to see more guys like this, and I think Williams is the first one that we can look to and say, that's the closest thing to Mahomes that we've seen since Mahomes showed up.
I think he could make the behind-the-back pass. I definitely think he's capable. Mike, though, objectively speaking, as much as we're excited and I think it's justified, what could get in the way? What do the Bears need to avoid? What cautionary words of wisdom would you offer if you're worried about this kind of getting – everything's going well now, but what could happen to make that change?
Playing the Packers twice, the Lions twice, and the Vikings twice. I mean, that's the big difference between the Bears and the Texans from a year ago. Nobody expected anything out of the Texans. C.J. Stroud ended up being the guy. The Texans playing every game except week 18 at 1 o'clock Eastern, 12 Central, went unnoticed as they were gradually putting together a special season. And lo and behold, they made it to the playoffs. They blew out the Browns, and they gave the Ravens everything they could handle in the divisional round. I think the Bears will have a harder go of that because of the division they're in. I think they are going to have their hands full every time they play one of those division rivals. Now, beyond the division, the conference isn't necessarily murderer's row. You got the 49ers, you got the Eagles, and who knows what the Bucs are going to be. I think they're woefully underrated in a lot of circles. But I think if the Bears can really goose that offense, and it looks like they can, I mean, between DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert, and you bring in Caleb Williams, and you have Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore, and Rome Odunze, it's hard for the brain to process the possibility the Bears might have a top 10, maybe even top 5 offense this year. A lot of it comes down to what Caleb Williams does. And yeah, he hasn't played in a regular season game yet. And yeah, it took a while for him to get going on Saturday. But man, some of the things he does, the way he buys time with a pump fake, avoids contact, there's so many great things about his game. And he can throw it. That rolling to the left and being able to throw the ball, the deep throw to Odunze, where he's rolling left and he's able to still control and loft the ball and have it drop right in, that's a thing of beauty. And once you see that a guy can do that, Bill Walsh always said, if you show me something a guy can do once, I can coach him to do it all the time. I mean, when you can do that kind of stuff, you've got a special skill set. So I think the Bears could make the playoffs this year. The problem is there's 15 other teams in the NFC that aren't going to concede a damn thing to anyone.
Yeah, I think the problem also, as you mentioned, is the division. You know, the Lions look like a pretty good team. The Packers, both those teams made the playoffs and won. And I know J.J. McCarthy is out, but they're not going to lay down in Minnesota. At least that's what they're saying. Even if Brian Flores under fire from Tua Tagliavola.
Yeah, look, the Vikings are a team that I think most people are going to expect to finish fourth, and maybe they will. But the Vikings enter the season, I think, with the perfect lack of expectation. When you naturally and organically have no expectations, that helps a coach so much because, number one, the players don't get big heads, and number two, they got a chip on their shoulder because the Vikings can be good enough. Most teams in the NFL, if it all lines up for them and they stay healthy, and of course the Vikings have already been bitten by the injury bug, but if you can stay healthy, you can be competitive. And we see it every year. We spend months talking about what the next season is going to be. And then they start playing games, and the games come quickly, and you've got a few days before the next week starts, and then they all come, and you reassess, and you reassess, and before you know it, you realize we were wrong in what we thought. You know, we're going to be wrong about everything except the Chiefs back in the Super Bowl again and winning a third straight. Everything about this season is completely and totally unwritten except the final chapter, the Chiefs win their third straight Super Bowl.
So, Mike, I like to talk about the rookie quarterbacks. You look at Bo Nix making a run in Denver, likely to be the starter. Jaden Daniels named the starter in Washington. What took so long? Drake May making a run in New England. But I don't understand. Help us figure this out. Why did Michael Penix not play in preseason game number 2 if his role primarily this season will be as a backup?
Well, it's always difficult to accurately predict the thought processes of the irrational. And the Falcons have already been irrational in making Penix the 8th overall pick after they gave $100 million fully guaranteed as a practical matter to Kirk Cousins. But when he doesn't play in the second preseason game and won't play in the third preseason game, that tells me either that they got freaked out by the J.J. McCarthy injury and they're being overly cautious. That's one possible explanation. Another is They're not entirely sure Kirk Cousins is going to be ready to go week one, so they want to keep Penix healthy in the event Cousins isn't ready to go. Maybe they don't want to build more of a groundswell among media, fans, teammates, owner, because I think the owner's a big proponent of playing Michael Penix. So let's just keep this guy under wraps for this preseason beyond that first game. And then finally, maybe they've already decided to go with Penix. And it dawned on me today, you know, usually with a rookie quarterback, once you put him out there, you can't really take him back. You can't bench him. It messes with his development. You got to be all in and you got to let it run its course before you take the guy out. But what they could do, they could say Kirk Cousins isn't truly fully ready. We don't want him to re-injure the Achilles. He's 36, et cetera. So we're going to give Penix just a couple of games while Kirk gets all the way to 100%. And then if Penix doesn't play well, all I have to say is Cousins is ready. We're not benching him. Cousins is ready. If he does play well, Cousins may never be ready. So again, it's hard to predict because they've done some nutty stuff, but it's weird. There's got to be a reason. And the reason can't be we've seen enough. No, he's not going to play except in the preseason based upon what you've been telling us. So I think we're going to see him on the field sooner than later. That's my gut.
Wow. Great stuff, Mike. Thank you as always.
Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. That's really interesting, huh?
Yeah, it is, because you didn't expect him to be a rookie quarterback to join the others. There could be as many as four starters by the first month of the season. He would be number five.
Wow. All right. We've got Stacey Dales going to join us next. We'll get a chance to talk to Stacey. She's been up there watching everything, and I really enjoyed some of her conversation.
She was at the game on Saturday.
Yes.
Saw her there.
Saw her talking to Roma Dunze while the rain was spattering down, and he had an umbrella. Poor Stacy's left getting soaked. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.